Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Time for our monthly home improvement show. And Chad Spate's back with us. He's the owner of Chad's Design Build. Chad, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Always great to be here.
He brought along a couple of guests today, Dana Langreck and Dondi Zambatfalvi joins us as well, and they are both from Bella Domicile. Both are certified kitchen and bath designers through the National Kitchen and Bath Association. Dana has a Bachelor's of Science from Iowa State in Housing and the Near Environment with a focus on interior design, currently serving on the Board of Directors of NARI, too. The National Association of Remodeling Industry. And Dana, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Dondi is also a certified Living in Place professional through the Living in Place Institute. And Dondi, great to have you with us as well. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate that, Larry. Thank you.
So as we talk with these experts, I hope you'll join in. Do you need some help selecting items for your home remodel? What other home improvement questions do you have? Easy to get to us. Just give a call at 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dondi, you're a sales designer, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. How do you help your clients?
They usually arrive on our doorstep with some sort of frustration. And so I like to think of myself as a frustration remover. They may be unhappy in their space, but not know exactly what to do to fix the problem. So it's really about learning, about just listening and asking the right questions to get to the heart of the matter. And then sometimes they do have some ideas, but it's then probing it further to really understand what's going to be the right solution for them. So people tell us they kind of seek us out because they have problem solving is a big part of what we do. And then we provide them with cabinets and countertops and get them connected with folks that can execute the project.
Can do the work.
Yeah.
And Dana, when should a homeowner consult a designer about their project? Somebody might say, well, I can figure this out for myself. What about it?
I think very early in the process, with the experience that we have in this industry, we can come up with solutions that they just may never have even thought about. And so just coming to us with the problem list to say, these are the things that are bothering us and we want to fix them, and then we can talk through and come up with some solutions. So the earlier we get involved, the better.
Can hiring a designer actually save you money?
Yes. I've had some projects in the past where people get a little ahead of the game and they maybe start spending some money on certain things. And then when we get going into the next project, we discover, oh, now we've got to change one of those first things. And then they end up spending more money trying to redo that first project to make the second project work.
Is that the kind of mistake people often have, Dondi? I mean, what are some of the mistakes that can happen if you don't have a professional there? I think Dana gave us a good one there. Yeah. But
I think redos are the most expensive projects that are on the books. But we have a lot of parameters, things as far as work areas and aisleways. I was just telling Dana this morning, I went into one house where the refrigerator door wouldn't open completely because it hit the island, right? And so I'm like, how does this even happen? You would be surprised. But sometimes people are in older spaces or very small spaces, and we have maybe solutions that they just haven't thought of.
Chad, do your clients bring in a designer often or typically?
So we have designers on staff, and, you know, I think it's not appropriate for me to bring my designers into the show here. So I reach out to other folks in the industry here locally. But So while sometimes our client may already have spoken to a designer, and we're certainly willing to work with a designer from the outside, we can, as a design build firm, you know, we have a design team on our staff, and we're accustomed to providing those services to our client to figure out, just as Dana and Dondi said, you know, what are the challenges here, and what would we recommend as some solutions? And as to build on their comments, you know, as far as how you save money, when we develop a project as a first step with our client, we're finding out what's it really going to cost to implement this improvement. And what people sometimes find when they're working with a contractor that doesn't go through a careful planning process at the front end is that cost that should have or could have been known and anticipated are not discovered during the that planning phase. And so then they become costly change orders in the middle of the project. And our goal is to figure that stuff out to the best of our ability at the front end so that people can make informed decisions.
You know what? Stephen Waterford has a question that I think may relate to exactly kind of what we're talking about here. Steve, thanks for calling.
Hello. Thank you for taking the call. Here's my question. I'm doing a house in Union Grove. It's got, it will have 2.5 baths when it's done. And I'm interested in not necessarily the latest design trends as far as, you know, where, what it looks like in the end, but something that's going to have appeal for long term. So what should I avoid and what should I be looking for as far as, you know, like vanities and lighting and that, such as that?
That's a really good question. Dana, do you want to start? And then we'll get Dondi in too and Chad.
I guess one of the things that I like to, I guess, focus on with my clients is focus on what makes you feel good in your space. And to me, that is timeless design. So focusing on things that are maybe colors or textures that you love. And unless you're thinking of resale, that's a different ball game. But if you just try to do maybe patterns that are popular right now, but that's not necessarily something that you would love long term, that's not going to be a good investment.
Dondi?
I think another thing to consider is, especially in a bathroom, it's very individual. So the storage needs are different. Some people want to have a tub. Some people don't use a tub ever and they just want a shower. How large of a shower? There are features you can build into a shower to make your life easier or more comfortable. Some folks might want a rain head shower just for a gentle flow. It's not going to be the only thing in the shower, but depending on how large, you might want a hand shower so it's easy to clean the space. And or if you have a dog that you want to give a bath to, you know, that's something that could happen in a shower too. So it's really zeroing in on the specific things that are going to make the space work for you.
Yeah. And Chad, something to add?
Yeah, I think certainly having a comfortable walk-in shower in one of those two full bathrooms is important. Something that we do as a retrofit for a lot of clients is to make a low or no threshold shower part of the bathroom for long-term safety and allowing people of all ages and abilities to utilize that space. That's an important thing. Might as well do it at the beginning, and then you don't have to make the improvement.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Steve, does that help out?
Yep. Those are all good suggestions. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Dondi, bathrooms are, I guess, turning into spas these days for some folks anyway. Tell us about some of those trends.
So there's a lot of things, especially I think since COVID, people have realized how important home and wellness are, and saunas are becoming something that people are asking for. I think safety with the zero threshold is something that's quite prominent. But shower experiences, you can have body sprays and digital control so that you can have something set so that the temperature is exactly what you want. You can have a heated floor to welcome you. It also helps to heat the space. So there's just there are a lot of things that can be done to make that space comfortable. Then there's also storage. People have a variety of storage needs, so making sure that works too.
Yeah, Dana, something to add.
I think a lot of people are trying to open up the bathroom spaces a little bit more, and so it feels more luxurious if you don't feel like you're in a small little cave when you're in the shower each morning, if your elbows aren't bumping the walls when you're shampooing your hair. And so trying to get the showers a little bit larger, since that's the primary space that's used on a daily basis. And more glass, so more clear glass, so you're not, again, just enclosed. And just opening it up much more is a much more luxurious feel to a bathroom space.
Mine doesn't look exactly luxurious because I stuck on the second floor where the master bedroom is. In the bathroom, I put the washer and dryer because I didn't want to have to run down into the basement or someplace to wash and dry my clothes.
Sure.
Is that, you ever see that anywhere or?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not something that everybody would want, but it certainly makes sense.
Something I wanted, and I'm happy I've got it, as a matter of fact. Well, Sherry in Oshkosh has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Sherry.
Hello.
Hi, Sherry. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, we live in a house that was built in 1952, and it's on a slab. It was an old ranch, but it's been added onto, et cetera. One of the challenges, I think, if we were ever to make any changes, is we don't have plans, and we don't know how the mechanicals run, like the electricity and the plumbing. And I wondered what a design firm could offer in a situation like that.
I'll answer
Donnie,
that.
Donnie, go ahead.
I think what we would start with is an idea of what the space needs to look like, and we would kind of ferret that out, and then we would involve somebody like Chad to see if that made sense. To me, having the space work the way that you need to is the highest priority. You might think things are very difficult to accomplish, but they probably have been tackled before, and there's ways to accomplish just about anything. Sometimes they're cost prohibitive, but let's first get an idea of how to make the space work.
And Chad, you can go into a space, and even if you don't have the original plan, you can probably kind of figure out what's going on there.
Yeah, in fact, it's very unusual. I'd say probably 1 out of 10 projects, the homeowner has the original plan. And of course, it's more, the older the home is, the more likely the plans don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And you can discover things that are a little bit less typical, more unusual in an older home. You know, houses that have been built in the last 30 years are pretty predictable because the codes are fairly well established and enforced. And so it is true that we anticipate things based on our experience, and then we often do some exploration during the discovery and planning phase to make sure that our assumptions are in fact correct. So I'm sure it's possible to make improvements to that ranch home on the slab. It's just a matter of having a good plan and figuring out what it's going to take.
And start by figuring out what you really want and then go from there. Sherry, does that help?
Yeah, I think the part about the little bit of exploration, because I'm used to having a house with a basement where you can look and see where the plumbing and the electricity runs, and I don't know how you would approach this, but they must have some ideas about how to find those mechanicals and where they are.
Yeah, if the bathroom that would be renovated is going to be in the same basic vicinity as the current bathroom, you know, moving around those drain pipes and water pipes and everything else is possible, And we're just connecting the dots, basically. But let's say there's a part of that house where you're wanting to add a bathroom and there's no plumbing in the vicinity. That's where we're really going to have a challenge figuring out where we're going to connect into the overall system. So
there you go, yeah. Sherry. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Taking a look at trends in design. By the way, you can email us, too, at ideas@wpr.org with our three guests today. Dondi Zambafali is the lead sales designer at Bella Domicile. She's been designing kitchens and baths for 20-plus years. With us as well, Dana Langreck, lead design sales designer at Bella Domicile, and she has been designing kitchens and baths for 20-plus years as well. She has a bachelor's in science from Iowa State University. And, of course, Chad Spade from Chad's Design Build, our guest as well. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau is our producer. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. And you're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today with some trends in design with Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build, Dondi Zambafalvi, and Dana Langreck, lead designers at Bella Domicile. So it's great to have all of them with us. And again, join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Bethany in Green Bay next. Hi, Bethany. Thank you for calling.
Hi. We are currently completing an addition on our home, and my husband is a general contractor and has friends. However,
I'm sorry, we missed part of your husband's a contractor, and then we lost you for a second.
Oh, he is. So he's doing it in his spare time. But we have, my question is, we're putting in a walk-in shower, and we have the fixtures, which include the rain head, a handheld shower, a regular shower head, and then we also have, I was planning on doing two sets of body sprays. And I have all that, and we have a digital system, the Kohler Anthem system. And our shower is 54 by 82 with, we have a no door opening right now. And I'm just wondering if you can help me. My real struggle is, do I want a bench in this shower? And where should I put those body sprays? You know, if I don't want to wash my hair, am I using them that way? Or if I'm using them therapeutically? But I was kind of thinking like two for my height and two for my husband.
That sounds fair, first of all. but I would say you can certainly put a bench in there, but we're seeing more and more flexibility by using a like teak bench that you would bring in. So you could have it in there if you want to. It can be moved around to different locations. Sometimes you might want to sit under the rain head, and sometimes you might not want to. So having that, it also having that wood item brings in another element of nature in that space, which can be very comforting as well.
Yeah, I think it's great. Dana, something?
I think it's definitely important to recognize, you know, body heights, because if you've got one body spray squirting you in the face, that's not really going to be a relaxing experience in the morning. And so I think it is going to be a lot of mapping out what is best for the different bodies in that area.
Chad, anything?
I'll just add that many times we mount the bench on the wall, and it's a fold-down bench, and that has the versatility of you get it out of the way when it's not there. But I like Dondi's comment about being able to move it around. That's certainly helpful.
Yeah. Bethany, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for calling. This whole business about health and wellness, Dondi, I think you brought that up, or maybe Dana, I can't remember. But, well, Dana, you want to comment on this people are adding to their homes for health and wellness.
Absolutely. There is a lot more research now, too, that shows the benefits of there can be light therapies, sound therapies, aromatherapies that can be incorporated into bathing and showering experiences. Just the ability to bring in natural light into spaces can make a big difference in your home as well. And so getting larger windows and bringing in, like Dondi mentioned, natural materials into the space, making connections with nature, there's a lot of benefit to those types of items.
Yeah. I have a friend who, they have a window more or less, what do you call those?
Skylight, or a solar tube.
Yeah, a solar tube, and it's really... It makes such a nice light when you go into the bathroom in the daytime. I mean, it's different from a light bulb.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you feel better. So you're finding more clients looking for that sort of thing?
Absolutely. I think some of the stuff that is out there, though, is a little newer. And so sometimes just asking a few questions on the front side of a project will help us uncover some of the opportunities that we can incorporate these into the designs that they may not have known about even.
AJ in La Crosse has a question. Let's go there. Hi, AJ.
Hey, you guys familiar with the ceiling-mounted electric radiant heating panels for jumping out of the shower and feeling sunshine?
I'm aware of them. What's your question?
Are they available? I know that they've had one years ago.
That radiate heat, basically.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, long-wave radiant heating panels. They screw onto the ceiling, and when you jump out of the shower, you feel the long-wave heat on yourself.
Yes, there's, I believe, Warmly Yours is one company that you could...
Warmly Yours?
Warmly Yours, I believe, is a company that has those panels. You could check that out online.
That's not... Warmly Yours, then, sounds like a place to at least take a look. And if you get them in, you're probably going to find others. You may find others as well that would meet your goals there, AJ. It is kind of... nice thought, especially in the wintertime here in Wisconsin to have that. Well, Chad, do you have many requests for workstations? I wanted to ask you about that. Workstations.
So with the pandemic, a lot of clients are looking to have a home office, a nice place where they can work from home. And so I imagine that's what a workstation would be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're talking about. So it's definitely very popular right now. And we are working with our clients to figure out, you know, what's the best place to imagine having a work from home space. Because there's a lot to think about when your office is at home.
Yeah, I would. Well, what are some of those things? Dana, you probably are familiar with this. What are some of those things?
Sure. I've done one recently where we wanted to bring a printer into the area, a printer scanner, but we didn't want the big machinery just sitting out on the countertop space just to create a little bit more visually pleasing room. And so we did some creativity to put it inside a cabinet, but the door flipped down, and then we were able to pull it out on a rollout shelf to make it more accessible. So some fun things like that. I guess wire management is something that we're always thinking about when we're getting into home office type design. And then also just orientation within a room, making sure that we've got, again, some window space generally, some natural light coming into the space, but not having that light on your computer screen that would be glaring and creating an uncomfortable space to be in. And just looking at how much countertop space that somebody might need to work at. Some people need very minimal. They're just on their keyboard. Other people need a little bit more room to spread items out on their workspace.
I'd be one of those, the latter. I kind of like this.
I'm a spreader.
Spread thing. Dondi, comment from you.
Yeah, I can. I'm thinking of a particular bathroom that I designed where the husband is a physician that has to take telemarketing or telehealth calls during the during the middle of the night. So in their bathroom, we designed in a space specific for him to use for that space. But to me, it's important to make that space not look like an office in the bathroom. So it's also kind of a vanity space as well. So it can have a dual purpose. And you mentioned workstations.
Yeah.
Another big trend is workstation sinks, which is a huge trend in kitchens right now. So a workstation sink is a large, could be as small as 2 feet, but up to 7 feet long sink. And I think why they're becoming so popular, one of the big complaints that people have in their kitchen is I don't have enough counter space. So the galley workstation is one example that we're pretty familiar with. Most popular size that we typically use, it's a 5 foot sink. Okay. Well, you might think, wow, 5 foot sink, how would you put that into a kitchen? But we've used it quite successfully in very small spaces and very large spaces. In a small space, you take that 5 foot workstation sink. The benefit of it is it's all, can be all countertop too. So within that 5 foot space, there is enough people, there's enough room for two people to have a workstation. And there's a series of sliding elements, bowls, containers, cutting boards that all work within that space. So within that 5 foot space, you can have two working stations in that area.
So you pull a board out over the
It actually slides left to right. And you could have two cutting boards with a couple bowls for preparation. They typically have a trivet for heating pans. The galley actually works with a standard sheet pan, so you could put your sheet pan in there, do your prep. It could go in the oven. It could come out and be in the galley for cooling. So very convenient. The other thing about it is instead of having, it's got one drain, so you have room for storage under that space too. So in a 5 foot galley workstation, we typically have a base recycling center on one side. You've got one area for the sink and drain, which is smaller, so you have then room for more storage under that space. So you've got a space that is just incredible for work. And I've had people like the fact that you can store your dirty dishes in there until you're ready to process them into the dishwasher and whatnot. But the mess stays all there. So everything is very conveniently located right in one area. So it's very efficient as well.
I like that. Yeah, that sounds great. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Mike in Cooksville emailed, they're looking in, this is a solar question, they're looking into solar and struggling to find a company they feel comfortable working with. Any suggestions would be welcome. And Chad, go to you for that.
So I would recommend going to the Focus on Energy site, which is a great way to hunt down folks in that particular line of work, solar installations. And I've got to believe that across the state, I'm not familiar with Cooksville, where exactly that is.
Not
but,
far. There's 20 miles from Madison or something.
Oh, well, there are a number of good companies in the Madison market. For sure. So,
but the Focus on Energy, yeah. And go ahead, Dana.
I had looked into, there's a company called Madison, or not a company, it's a group, and it's S-U-N at the end. And so they're collectively trying to get people together to get better rates. So by multiple people working through them, they do some vetting of the different solar companies and then can offer some great kind of group pricing as well. So they've got some information on their website as well.
Madison. Mm-hmm. Okay. Judith in Milwaukee, we'll go to you. Hi, Judith.
Hi. I have a question that seems sort of mundane compared to some of the others that you've been talking about. But I'm so confused about light bulbs. This is for a kitchen fixture. And if I'm online looking at things and they're talking about lumens and they're talking about levels and I'm just so confused. Where do I even start?
That's a good question. Lumens are a measure of the light that comes out of the bulb. So to me, foot candles is something that I like to pay attention to. And you can download a free app, a light meter for your phone that will measure the foot candles that are hitting the counter. So it's a proven fact that as we age, we need more light. And you can measure typically in a kitchen, you would like to have 100 to 150 foot candles hitting the counter. So that's a first way to start to evaluate. Of course, you may know if you have enough light. It seems in my experience, people are married. One of them likes a lot of light in the space, and the other one, they're always married to somebody that doesn't like much light in the space. So having the ability to get enough light and then being able to dim it, those are kind of the key things. The other thing you mentioned about bulbs, which it is confusing with watts and so forth, but there are also resources online. My age, I'm familiar with what a 100-watt bulb feels like. Well, how many watts is that in an LED bulb? And there's conversion tables online that can help you with that sort of an evaluation.
Yeah. Dana, something to add?
Yeah, lots of light bulb packages will do that conversion for you. So like an LED might say it only needs about 7 watts, which is just the power that's coming to it. But it will tell you generally on the box, it'll say similar to, say, 60 watt or 100 watt. So looking for that information will be helpful to know maybe how bright the space might be very quickly. The other thing with the LED light bulbs to really consider is the color temperature. And so there you can find bulbs that are like a 2700 Kelvin. And those are going to be very similar to the incandescent light bulbs that we've been very familiar with for decades. And I would say a lot of people now, though, are shifting more to some of the brighter bulbs. And so going to something that's like a 3000 Kelvin, that's going to be a little bit brighter light for you in the space, but still be warm colored to go with maybe your fixtures that you've got in your kitchen. You also find bulbs that are going to be like a 4,000 or the daylight 5,000. I personally find those pretty harsh, especially the daylight 5,000. I think that those are just I think they're kind of hard on your eyes, and they maybe don't make the colors in your room look very pleasing. And so I would definitely recommend staying more with a 3,000 to maybe 3,500 at the most in your space.
Yeah. Chad, any more?
I was just going to address that same topic of the Kelvin, but that's very important. And there are some bulbs out there that you actually can change the warmth or coolness of the color, which is nice. That's a feature that's becoming possible with some of the LED bulbs. You can actually switch between a 2700 up to, say, 4 or 5,000. So you're going to go from the warm light to a much cooler light.
Oh, so as you adjust the intensity of the light, that changes it? Or how does that work?
It's not so much intensity as the color of the light. So, and that's the thing here where it gets confusing, because on the one hand, as Dana was saying, you know, an incandescent bulb, where that's a filament that's heating up, and that's giving a very warm light. It's a very yellow light. And that tends to be in the 2500 to 3000 Kelvin range of color. And then the cooler colors or the bluer colors tend to be up in the 4 to 5000 range. And that's separate from the intensity, which has to do with how many lumens or foot candles are coming out of that bulb. You know, so you can have a very bright light that is a warm color, or you can have a very bright light that is a cool color.
Got it.
And now we have the ability to pick all of these things, and sometimes to even change both the intensity and the warmth of the color with a single bulb. So
you could have a pretty bright light, but a warm color.
Correct.
Absolutely.
Correct.
Judith, does that help?
Well, just one more thing about that, that if I have my fixture that says in that it takes a standard base bulb of 60 watts or 13 watt standard base CFL, where does the LED bulb come in on that? I'd like to put the sort of spotlight LED in there.
That's a great question. So the LED bulbs can come with a standard base, and I would definitely recommend switching to the LED bulbs. Most of the LED bulbs are rated for 50,000 hours. So to give you an idea of what that means, if you had it on for 8 hours a day, it would last 17 years. So it's just it's a much better investment for you in the long run.
Mm-hmm. And Judith, does that help?
I want to make sure that the fixture itself is capable of handling number on the LED.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, Dana, you want to chime in?
The LEDs actually use much less wattage, and so the fixtures are generally rated for the typical incandescence. And so I can't remember what you said for the wattage, but if it said that
60,
if it takes 60 watts, if you're picking out an LED bulb, it's probably only going to be about maybe 7 to 13 watts. So you're way below its capacity.
Right. That's correct. And part of that, too, the rating is often tied to the amount of heat that the bulb itself is going to give off. And so when a fixture says it has a 60-watt limit, that's often driven by the fact that 60-watt incandescent bulb was going to give off a certain amount of heat. And when you're putting in a CFL or an LED bulb, they're going to give off some heat, but they're not going to come close. And so you can actually potentially put a bulb in there that's going to give off more lumens than the incandescent bulb, but still be well within the safety rating for the heat dissipation. So.
And I'm kind of wondering if maybe the when we were talking about 2,700 Kelvin to 5,000 Kelvin, that really doesn't impact the fixture at all.
Correct.
Just to clarify, I was maybe thinking that was part of the confusion.
Mm-hmm. I hope that helps, Judith. Thank you so much for calling today. Appreciate it. Dana, Dondi, and Chad, our guests today. Chad, of course, of Chad's Design Build. Dana and Dondi are with Bella Domicile. I looked at your website. It's pretty cool. There are lots of good examples of what before and after and kind of new things that people hadn't seen. So the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Or email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today. We've talked about trends in design, but we're taking other home improvement questions as well as we move along, and you can join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you as we visit with our guests from Bella Domicile and Chad's Design Build in Madison. And Ron in La Crosse has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Ron.
Well, it isn't so much of a question, but incandescent bulbs can be less wasteful of energy if you have these adapters. They got the type you screw into the socket of a lamp, know, an end table lamp, and I also have one that you can plug into an outlet, and I plug my floor lamp into it, and that one gives four different levels of brightness, and it even reverses through the levels of brightness when I want to shut it off, so I'm not leaving the room in the dark. But you just touch a metallic piece of the lamp, part of the lamp, and you can set it at whatever level it's designed for.
Chad?
So that's a great point, Ron. I mean, certainly incandescent bulbs, we never had to ask the question, is this incandescent bulb dimmable, for example? Like an incandescent bulb is pretty much universally dimmable. And so in dimming it, you are using less power and you are getting fewer lumens. And there are three-way bulbs that we're familiar with that are by design. They have two filaments and you're doing one, the other, or both. That's certainly true, but it is also true as far as efficiency goes, like how much power are you putting into this device and then how much light do you get out of it? How many lumens? And incandescent bulbs are just less efficient than CFL and LED bulbs.
Yeah.
So
there you go, yeah. Ron. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Let's take a call from Eileen in Madison. Eileen, thank you for calling.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I love the program, and it's my first time calling in. I wanted to ask the guests input as far as how much you can really do on your own. Like, so I'm kind of a freak about the home interior design. Like, I love tiles, and I love looking them up online and researching them and looking at all the brands. And so if you have a really strong sense of, like, your own sort of design palette and fixtures and what you want aesthetically, you know, how much can you do on your own working with a contractor as opposed to, you know, the kind of input that a designer can have in the project?
Good question. Dana, we'll go to you.
I have clients oftentimes come in and they've got some pretty strong ideas about what they want the space to look like. The biggest question is the execution part of it. And so there are some details, especially thinking about tile. What are the edges going to be like? A lot of tiles don't have finished edges on them. And so there are multiple options that you can choose from with that. Just making sure that the scale is proper for the space. So, you know, getting a tile that is sized right, that might not look awkward when it's all done, or just making sure that the materials are coming together in a pleasing way, but still using your ideas as the driving force. And so even if there is a designer involved, it's more as just the executor and just making sure the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed so that when the execution, the installation is happening, that there aren't questions or things that are maybe not going to look right in the end.
Yeah, makes sense. Chad, comment?
Yeah, another thing that might be added value of getting a designer involved would be that often when we're rendering these ideas for our clients to see, you know, we're using software that really gives a realistic look at what that space that you are envisioning yourself is going to look like. And once you see the tile you pick and the colors and everything else rendered accurately, in a professional software, you know, you might, as the person leading the inspiration, decide that you want to make some changes to that. And so that's a benefit that is often obtained. And, you know, whether you know what you want or whether you're relying heavily on your designer to guide you to the options that are out there.
Hmm. And Dana, something else to add?
For example, I had a client that had a beautiful picture of a hood that she wanted over her cooktop area, and it was a very large focal point in the room of the photo that she had picked out. And when we then scaled it to her actual kitchen space that only had an 8-foot ceiling in there, that type of design just really wasn't going to work. And so then we worked as a team to come up with some new ideas that gave her the essence of what she was looking for, but maybe tweaked it just a little bit to actually make it fit within the space.
I'd say that we kind of view working with clients as a collaboration. We're not the designer that's telling them what they should do because we know best. It's taking the input that the client has and just making sure that the end product is really what's going to make them happy.
Well, Eileen, that help?
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Mark in New Berlin will go to you. Hi, Mark.
Hi. The incandescent bulbs have a good feature, at least here in Wisconsin when we have to heat, you know, 6 or 7 months a year. They are 100% efficient. Most of it goes into heat for your house, and the rest of it goes into light so you can see. And I heard you guys mention CFLs. I think they're terrible. You drop them, and you're putting a little bit of mercury in your house. And you can say it's just a little bit, but there is no minimum that's safe for having mercury laying in your house.
Mark, thanks for calling. Comment on that, Chad.
Well, I would agree. I'm not a fan of CFL lights. I mean, certainly we're all the compact fluorescent is that's what that stands for. And of course, we're all familiar with fluorescent bulbs. It's very institutional. It turns out a fluorescent bulb is in the 4,000 to 5,000 range of coolness.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a very cool light. It's very similar to a natural sunlight. So those comments about fluorescent lighting, I would agree with. It's also true that when the efficiency studies have been done, they have found, as the caller points out, that in heating climates like we mm-hmm. live in here in Wisconsin, where we are heating our homes over half of the year, we do get some heat from our light bulbs when they're incandescent. And when you change those bulbs into bulbs that are providing more light as opposed to heat, because we do call them light bulbs. They're not, you know, heating bulbs.
Yeah.
But old incandescent bulbs do provide mostly heat and then light, whereas a LED bulb is going to provide mostly light and very little heat. So what you save in energy producing the light, you're still going to have to make up for providing the heat. And so the caller is technically correct. Personally, I like getting heat from my furnace and getting light from my light bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to get heat from your light bulbs, then incandescents or you know, some of the other types of bulbs can provide that. So,
Mark, thanks for those comments. Appreciate it. Sharon in Madison, your turn. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, we're doing a basement remodel. It's like 40 by 20. So we have 18 current can lights that were there beforehand. And we've heard of these conversion kits to turn them into LEDs. And we've also heard of wafer lights. To replace the 18 would cost us about $2,500 to convert to wafer lights, and the conversion kit is much cheaper. So I'm looking for some input on, should we spend the money, or is the conversion kit just as good?
That is a good, interesting question.
A great question. I mean, it's like there's so many choices and options out there. And so, you know, one of the things that we're always on the lookout for is some of the bulbs or conversion kits. They're very inexpensive, but they may not last as long. We were talking earlier about how, you know, many of these LED bulbs are rated to last for many tens of thousands of hours of output, and which is much longer than an incandescent. But every now and then, some of those do fail. And the less expensive bulbs tend not to live up to their life expectancy. So that's just something that I point out. It's hard to know. But there are certain brands that we tend to trust that are, they're not off-brand. They're you know, brands like Sylvania or there are a few others that are out there that, you know, we know is a higher quality product. And so I would be concerned about that or ask those questions of the the people that you're working with. But it is a trade-off. You are, when you're converting to some of these bulbs that are using a fifth of the energy to produce the same amount of light, you know, there's some cost there, but then you are going to save on your utility bill. And so the quality of the light, though, is just as important as the cost of providing it. You don't want to create a space that you're not going to like the color of the light. So I would pay attention to that.
Yeah. On that note, I think we've covered it, Sharon. Thank you so much for calling. It's one of those things. All right, it's going to cost you more to go the one way. But it sounds like, Sharon, I mean, they're doing this remodel with the idea that they're going to be around there for a while.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Unless they were doing it to sell. But even then... it probably would make a difference in what you could, a feature that would be something that would be worth more money to the person, worth more in terms of the person who might be willing to buy the house.
Sure.
Well, I tell you what, John in Appleton, I hope you stay with us, and I hope you stay with us, too. We're talking home improvement trends and design with our three guests, Dondi, Zahn Baffley, Dana Langreck, lead designers at Bella Domicile, and Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Design Build. We'll take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back. But call in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at home improvement on the show today, Larry Mueller here with our guest Chad Spate of Chad's Design Build in Madison, Dondi Zambatfovi, and Dana Langreck with us as well, and they are lead designers at Bella Domicile and certified kitchen and bath designers. So it's great to have them all here. Callers online, we have a number of questions. One thing I wanted to bring up, we were talking earlier about four body sprays, the shower, the handheld, and Cliff had emailed to remind the woman who was putting in all these things, a rain head and everything, that she'll need to confirm that she has enough water pressure to get the effects she hopes for. And that sounds like a good idea, Chad.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's just a matter of bringing the right size water pipe to that valve, but
yeah, but you
want, if you don't have the pressure, you could have some issues. So.
Yeah, John in La Crosse, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, am I on?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, there's a strange noise that came through. When we're in the house, the public radio station is on the entire time, so there's where my problem starts. We had a kitchen remodel done. And they put the recess, or they called cans or something, they're kind of up into the ceiling. And yeah, those are LED, and everything was great. I told them to leave the wiring stubbed out for a fixture in the kitchen because we hadn't decided what we wanted to have there. Got a fixture from a high-end place. I installed it. I know what I'm doing along those lines. But when we turn the fixture on, the radio crackles and hisses, and you can't listen to it. I was wondering if there's any options that we have to make that stop.
Aside from just turning the light off, yeah, for sure.
So,
lights,
John,
where you got the clicker, where you can adjust the temperature and the brightness and all that kind of stuff, but you can't listen to the radio when the thing's on.
So I have to say that while if I had that problem, I know who I would call. I mean, there are some people, electricians, and some of the folks that live in the audiovisual world that help resolve these sorts of problems. beyond that, I wouldn't know what to tell you. I believe it can be resolved, but it might be an incompatibility between the fixture that you have purchased and installed and your sound system, or the fact that you're, you know, disrupting the radio waves in the home. So there, yeah. You may unfortunately have to replace the fixture, but there might be a way around it, and I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, you need to talk to an electrician, I would think, probably, to see what could be done. And is this something that's come up with you guys at all?
No, it's that's why you have your trusted core of people that you go to with specific right. problems, because they're experts in that particular field.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I wish we could be more help, John, but I get a hold of a good local electrician, possibly. You're in La Crosse, the where you bought the fixture from. They may, right online, they may have something, or you could call and talk to them and see. Because if you've had the problem, there's got to be other people who've had the problem. That's for sure. I might
right.
I might even go back to the fixture, the company, first, and see what they recommend for an alteration.
I think that's good advice.
Yeah, good luck, John, and keep that light off until you get that fixed, so that you can hear Wisconsin Public Radio.
Absolutely.
For sure.
The solution is not turning off the radio.
Yeah,
that's right.
That's not the solution. Thanks, John. Oh, boy. Kathy in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, Kathy. Oh, actually, let's go to Jay and Two Rivers. Can we do that, Tyler? Because Jay and Two Rivers may have a solution to the radio problem. Jay, hi.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's probably by a different LED, and there's no way to tell. Once upon a time, the FCC limited products that produced FM interference or radio interference, but they've become so politicized that they're not doing their job properly, and many LED lights will emit VHF frequency, which is what TV and FM resides in. So it's not an incompatibility with the fixture. It's just the product itself is emitting that RF frequency. And I'm all in favor of LEDs. They make sense. However, the 50,000-hour rating, the LED itself may last that long, but the solid-state drive circuitry that's needed often fails before that. And again, there's really no way to tell at this point which brand is going to last longer and which brands will not interfere with your radio. Maybe at some point, like now they're listing LEDs that are dimmable, maybe they'll give us a no radio interference rating some point.
Yeah. Well, Jay, I appreciate the call.
Yeah, those are good points. I mean, all of that's true.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it very much. Kathy in Sturgeon Bay, your turn. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I'm thinking about putting in vinyl plank flooring over my tile because I've got so many air pockets, and it's just apparently the joists. When I built the house 20 years ago, they spaced the joists so that even when I repair the grout, the air pockets still pop through. And I don't want to have to dig up all the tile and the grout, and they're telling me I don't have to, but I've got some family members that are real concerned about that. Any ideas?
Sure. That's a great question. I would say that you're going to get the best long-term satisfaction with your floor if you remove that tile. And part of the reason is that what's happening is the floor is deflecting. It's not quite structurally strong enough to resist that deflection, and there's enough deflection happening that it's compromising the grout and the tile floor. And the vinyl plank would be able to perform long-term, more than likely, with the deflection that you're getting right now, but the tile is not appropriate. If you leave the tile on the floor, that's added weight that's going to make it worse. You're also going to lose a little height in the room, and that could be an issue. And more importantly, I'd be concerned of the added stress on the floor, some of the grout cracking and working its way up into spaces that cause additional problems for your vinyl plank. If the question is simply, is it technically possible to install it over that tile, it is, but it's not as desirable.
All right. There we go. Thank you so much, Kathy, for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Let's take a call from Ed in Northern Illinois. Ed, hi.
Good afternoon. Quick question. For doing a remodel in my house, any comments about replacing line voltage cans and lights with low power system?
I'm not sure what I
like a low voltage system.
Yeah, low voltage, exactly.
I don't have much experience with that, and again, I would be relying on a couple of electricians that that we utilize their expertise. I mean, what is motivating you to install a system like this? Why are you thinking you want it?
Well, switch to LED, which can be done either way, but also have control over different light controls. So light, 3,000 versus 4,000 kind of lighting, things like that. More sophisticated lighting control.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're going to, get those benefits by switching to this particular system, then I guess it's just a matter of deciding if it's worth what you're going to have to invest to have that installed.
Yeah.
I'm not sure of any reason that I would recommend against it other than once you kind of convert to that, then your fixtures will have to be the low voltage fixtures that are part of that system, so.
Yeah. Yeah, and Dana?
Most of the cabinetry lighting that we're putting into our cabinets, under cabinet lighting that would shine down on the countertop surface, any interior cabinet lights, maybe lighting up a display cabinet, those generally are all the low voltage lighting systems.
True.
And so even though we're not necessarily controlling the ceiling lights with the low voltage systems, the cabinetry lighting realm is very much in that low voltage world and is very standard. Right. And has been used for many years.
Yeah. Okay.
Excellent point.
There you go, Ed. Thank you so much for calling. Connie in Oregon emailed to ask if she can put a laundry room with washer and dryer in a second floor room that shares a wall with a bathroom. It would be two separate rooms with a common wall between them. She's wondering, can washing machine plumbing be connected to the existing bathroom plumbing, and does the washer physically need to be near the wall shared by the bathroom?
I've got a project very similarly going on right now.
Dana?
We do. As far as tying into the existing, I'm not sure, but cost-wise, in speaking with the contractor that was involved on that project, it was definitely less expensive to keep the plumbing on that common wall area versus on the opposite side of the room where new lines would be running. The biggest concern that we had on that particular project was actually the venting. And so when you do have pipes running up through the wall, you can't necessarily run the dryer vent straight through those pipes to get out to the exterior wall. So that was more of a concern rather than the plumbing issue.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you very much for that email. Excuse me. And Mike in Montella, will go to you next. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Lady called in about not wanting to take up her flooring. I spent 40 years in flooring, and I guarantee you she's going to have a problem. If she goes over the top of that existing flooring, she's just going to exaggerate the problem. It just won't be as noticeable.
Right. Yeah.
Mike, so you're agreeing with Chad on this one for sure. Thank you very much for that comment. Appreciate it. Oh, my goodness me. I think I had another email that I wanted to read here, and I just got to find it on my screen. Jill's noting that we've had a number of calls from people who use incandescent lights in spaces to stop things from freezing in the winter.
Wow.
And what are there better options to that?
Well, so there are there's electric heat tape, which again, I mean, it's a product designed to create heat, so that is often a good solution. Sometimes putting the bulb in the space can be good too. The problem is, of course, if the filament fails. Then you no longer have a bulb providing heat. And, of course, heat tape can fail, too. But the filament of an incandescent bulb can be a little bit more delicate than the filament that's in heat tape. And so, again, I would give the advice that generally if we're looking for heat, we should be utilizing something that's designed to give off heat. And that is going to be reliable and not as prone to failure.
Yeah.
So.
Dana?
There's a lot of safety concerns, too. So say that you have a fixture that's rated maybe only for 40 watts, but you're trying to get the extra heat, and maybe you're putting a 60 or 100 watt in there. As Chad mentioned before, the heat that's coming off of that, the fixture isn't rated for that. And I do have a project I just started working on that the fire in their home started because of heat in a can light fixture that just over time was too close to flammable materials. And eventually that got brittle enough that then when the light was on long enough, it created enough heat to start a fire. So there's a lot of safety issues that need to be considered as well.
Boy, I guess so. I was going to ask about the fixtures themselves. As I noticed you had a lot of, on your website, you had a lot of really kind of cool shades or fixtures. One of the things I've enjoyed about our home is that the ones that we put in the home when we did a total rebuild of the house kind of from the inside were the fixtures that we put in. They're different ones in all areas and really cool looking, and they're still cool looking 10, 12 years later. Mm-hmm. But are there new things or what should you consider when you're thinking about that for different spaces?
I think lighting is a great way to bring in personality. Those are something that is very visual in the space. And I'm finding that a lot of the decorative fixtures are actually getting a little bit larger these days. And so not just the small little tiny pendants hanging over the island, but maybe going with larger round drum styles. There's different materials, even some with fabrics or different types of glass, different combinations of metal and glass. And it's a great way to bring in some personality to a space and even sometimes use those as focal points in a room.
Yeah, it's one of the things I really like about my house, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that as well. And I think considering different levels of light, there's the overhead light, there's accent light, there's maybe inside the cabinet lighting. Those are all things that can add to the atmosphere.
And Joe in Jefferson has a question, not about lighting, but we'll go there. Hi, Joe.
Hi. About a sump pump being put in after the fact, I know it can be done, but in my situation, I have the concrete basement floor or foundation floor was poured over clay. And I know this because when the radon remediation guy came in, when we bought the home, he drilled in and he just saw clay and he's like, hey, check this out. And they didn't put gravel down when they, and maybe because with clay you can get away with that. So maybe it's a two-part question. What do you think about having your, what problems can that lead to? Because they didn't put a sump pump in. And now if I wanted one in, I don't know if it would have helped if there was gravel under there or drain tile, which doesn't exist either. So that's my question. I get a little water in the basement, not enough to be a catastrophe, but I'd like to have that sump pump in there for conditions when it really gets maybe more rain or...
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not unusual. We find it all the time when we're retrofitting a drain tile and sump into an older home in the Madison area. They're often right on the clay, ground after when they excavated. They just poured that floor right over top of it. And so it is possible to have... A drain tile dug in on the perimeter, and of course there will be a bit of an area that will be dug out, and there will be stone put into that around the actual drain tile, and then it's not going to perform as well as it would if you had a gravel base under the slab, but it's probably going to collect most of the water that finds its way under the house and end up in that sump, and hopefully it will take care of it. So
there you go, Joe. Thank you. And Lindsay, do you have a quick question? Hi.
Hi there. Yes, I have quite a big project. A hot water pipe burst in my house while I was on vacation. So unfortunately, my entire house has been affected with heat and humidity. My question for you guys is, the windows have been so damaged, they swelled shut. At this point, it's been about a week through the drying process, and they're still swollen shut.
Wow.
Even if they dry out enough and they start opening up back again, is there any integrity issues, insulating properties in the winter? Would you say those windows would still need to be replaced?
Yeah, so sorry to hear about that. It's hard to say at this point, because there's so many different levels of quality, and the materials that your windows are made out of would impact the answer to this. But what I would do if I were you is, you're going to dry out the house and then let the winter come and see how things adjust. And I might recommend a home performance evaluation to really thoroughly look at things with infrared imaging and do the blower doors, see how much the home has been adversely impacted by this event, and then that will help you craft a thoughtful solution to determine really what needs to be replaced and what maybe is good enough and can be dealt, accommodated.
And you might want to talk about with your homeowner's insurance people too, because that could... that would be a very expensive.
Yes, don't close out the claim.
Don't close the claim out
yet.
Yeah. Well, we have to close out our claim on the day. I want to thank you all very much for being with us today. It was great fun. Chad Spade of Chad's Design Build. And by the way, full disclosure, Chad's Design Build is one of our PR's many business sponsors. And with us from Bella Domicile, Dondi Zambafali, close, I think I got it, and Dana Langreck. Thank you both for being
Thank
with
you,
us.
Larry.
Maybe we can
Thank
do it
you.
Again. Appreciate it very much. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.